You are tuned to Radio Q.
Are you reeling in the years?
This is Reeling in the Years with Glenn A. Baker.
Are you reeling in the years?
A musical journey back in time.
Hi, Glenn A. Baker here. Often blissfully unaware of the fact, global popular music has been impacted upon significantly by things Australian over many years. There may only be 20 million of us, but as in cinema and literature, we tend to punch above our weight, with international success disproportionate to the size of this hardy bunch clustered together beneath the Southern Cross. Some musical contributions immediately spring to mind, such as the Robert Stigwood Bee Gees axis of the late 70s, or individual acts like Little River Band, Air Supply, INXS, Men at Work and Kylie Minogue. Indeed, we could go back to Dame Nellie Melba and Joan Sutherland. But there is also a swathe of great songwriters, producers and managers. In fact, wherever music is being made, there's usually something or somebody Australian involved in some way. But if I were to be asked to nominate the most influential contribution from the wide brown land to post-war popular music, it would not be one of flesh and blood, but one of technology. Astonishing technology that changed the very sound of rock music and the way it was recorded. Because ranking up there with the invention of the solid body electric guitar, multi-track recording, powerful stage amplifiers, and Mr. Moog synthesizer is a remarkable machine that can be found in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland and the Smithsonian Institute in Washington. A little bit of Australia, a long way from home. Invented by two brilliant Sydney boys and named after one of the city's beaches and harbour ferries, the Fairlight CMI, as in computer musical instrument, took the music world by storm at the dawn of the 80s and maintained its supremacy throughout that decade. It allowed the user to digitise a real sound and manipulate its tone and pitch, making the reproduction of realistic sound possible in a way that had previously been unachievable, perhaps even inconceivable. Championed by some of music's most stellar figures, including Peter Gabriel, Stevie Wonder, Herbie Hancock, Yes, U2, Jean-Michel Jarre and Australia's Ivor Davies, it left a mark that can never be erased. As Ice House leader Davies explains.
Right through history, composers have been dissatisfied with using the palette that everybody else has walked all over and had a go of, and they want something new. Apart from the actual technology of recording itself, which of course was a monumental change from an environment where the only way you could see music was to go and watch a performance, completely turned it on its head, I would say. 90% of probably what you're hearing on a recording is coming out of some kind of manufactured element. And that manufactured element is through a device called a sampler, and that's what the Fairlight is. And it was the first of that generation of samplers. This sort of overtook us and nobody was really looking, and probably most people are unaware of that fact. It was just such a quantum leap. And wherever I have the opportunity, I try to trumpet the fact that, of course, this all happened in a suburb in Sydney.
It was 30 years ago that respected Australian singer-songwriter Doug Ashdown took a call from a friend by the name of Kim Ryrie, asking for a little assistance.
He had this gizmo, and he asked me to sing one steady note into it. Then he proceeded to play my voice singing the note all the way up the keyboard. I was flabbergasted. I didn't quite understand what was happening, but I guess I knew that the recording of music would never be the same again. I went on to use the Fairlight on my records and even on stage, and I was one of the very first.
Though it was only slightly evident, the earliest Fairlight use on a commercially released record could well have been the gentle bass rumble on an Ashdown album title track, Empty Without You, recorded in 1975.
I'd like to write to you to satisfy myself. I'd like to tell you some things that I felt. How I miss our Sunday afternoons at home, all alone. I suppose I shouldn't have gone away. I suppose I should have known that I'd be empty without you, and always wanting to go back across the years to when you wrote me notes and rang me on the phone. You were working nights, couldn't stop thinking about us. You loved me then, I love you now, and I can't even tell.
Throughout the second half of the 70s, Kim Ryrie and partner Peter Vogel, electronic whiz kids par excellence, developed and perfected their invention in consultation with local musicians, notably Michael Carlos from the legendary progressive rock band Tully. Asked once if he was aware of others working on the digital synthesis of sound, Vogel said, "I heard that Stanford University was doing some interesting work. I went over to visit them, and they had rather large computers that churned away for 10 minutes and played one note." By the end of the 70s, the two engineers had begun taking their efforts to the world via electronic trade fairs and personal artist approaches. The desired clientele was, unashamedly, rich rock stars. One of the first to come on board was a musician who had also been one of the most important users of the Moog synthesizer in the early 70s, Stevie Wonder. When his multi-platinum album Hotter Than July appeared in 1980, it bore a credit that had not been seen before on a major rock album, but would soon appear more times than could be counted. The Fairlight had arrived, and there was no out-of-town run. Blend of Stevie Wonder's Happy Birthday and the title track to the biggest selling album of all time, Michael Jackson's Thriller. both of them with sound shaped by Australian invention, the Fairlight synthesizer, whose 30th birthday I'm celebrating here on Reelin' in the Years. I'm Glenn A. Baker, and there's some mighty music to follow. Now, at the risk of dazzling you with data, I might just convey this useful description that I came across. Alongside its sampling ability, the Fairlight CMI was a highly flexible instrument that allowed editing, looping, mixing of sounds, as well as the ability to draw sound waves and sequence samples. They were used for recording sessions, both as an instrument and an editing console in the production of music. Certainly the attraction of the Fairlight, as word spread throughout music, was its chameleon-like qualities. It could give you the sound of strings or of broken glass. It could move or manipulate any sound. It could enhance or dominate. It could open doors into sound. But there was something else, something momentous. What Reary and Vogel had done, as a secondary consideration in their endeavours, was invent sound sampling. Something taken for granted by anyone who makes a record now, but quite unheard of at the dawn of the 80s. It was the first sampling workstation available. Stevie Wonder aside, it was adventurous British musicians who hurled themselves into the Fairlight orbit and stretched its possibilities. Peter Gabriel was so enamoured of the instrument that he not only assisted in its development, but arranged for his cousin to set up a company to import the pricey units into Europe. He first used it on record with the track Start in 1980, and you can hear a CMI sample of a concrete block being dragged across the floor on his 1982 track Lay Your Hands on Me. By 1982, his sound, as that of Thomas Dolby, was a virtual advertisement for the invention. Here's a sweep of some of their most influential and well-known uses of Fairlight.
In 1920, a small group of Australians started an airline. Now, in 2005, Qantas celebrates its 85th year of taking passengers to their favourite destinations. Not to mention many happy returns. Qantas, celebrating its 85th year.
Some sections of She Blinded Me With Science and Hyperactive by Thomas Dolby, and before that, Shock the Monkey and Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel. This was music defined by the instrument on which it was created. It was the sound of the Fairlight CMI, and it was only the beginning. England's The Alan Parsons Project had been crafting striking electronic and keyboard-slanted albums since Tales of Mystery and Imagination in 1976, and had broken well into the American market. But Alan never made the top 30 at home until Eye in the Sky in 1982, which was also his biggest charter in America, reaching number 7. Eye in the Sky, like Ammonia Avenue and Vulture Culture that would follow it, had lashings of Fairlight as Parsons revelled in his new discovery. It even gave the project a UK hit with Don't Answer Me in 1984. And on the subject of hits, you could have knocked prog rock group Yes over with a feather when, having never been higher than 13 on the Billboard single charts, they streaked to number one there in 1983 with Owner of a Lonely Heart. Trevor Horn, the Yes man who produced and played on that, was swiftly becoming accustomed to the top of the charts, because that's where he was soon after, in Britain, as producer of Frankie Goes to Hollywood. Once again, Fairlight to the fore. This was a sound that was connecting with millions of listeners.
Ooh. See yourself. You are the spencer.
Of a couple of Fairlight masters ringing extraordinary commercial mileage out of the Australian invention that was on the top of every studio's acquisition list by 1983. After the Alan Parsons Project and Don't Answer Me, two projects by former Buggles and Asia member Trevor Horn, owner of A Lonely Heart by Yes, and a medley of Frankie Goes to Hollywood's pair of British number ones, Relax and Welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Interestingly, while it was mainstream chart rock pop that was availing itself of the features of the Fairlight in the UK and Australia, its American application was much more at the hands of screen composers and jazz musicians. People like Jan Hammer, who we'll hear later, and Herbie Hancock, who we'll hear right now, with his 1983 hit Rocket, which was actually a dud in the US while soaring in the UK and Australia. But their musical change stateside has always been a slow process, and they did like to stick with guitar bands. By the way, it was Hancock who donated his Fairlight Series 2 machine, a $25,000 purchase at the time, to the Smithsonian Institute.
In 1920, a small group of Australians started an airline. Now, in 2005, Qantas celebrates its 85th year of taking passengers to their favourite destinations. Not to mention many happy returns. Qantas, celebrating its 85th year. As part of our 85th birthday celebrations, Qantas is offering customers who fly on a Qantas service during November the chance to win a trip to be a part of aviation history. This amazing prize for two people will visit our historic home in Longreach, including the Qantas Founders Museum, before embarking on a journey to France for a VIP tour of the Airbus factory in Toulouse for a rare insight into our future, the A380. For entry details and terms and conditions, visit qantas.com/85thbirthday or see the Australian Way magazine in your seat pocket.
Thank you.
By 1984, Fairlight credits were slipping onto so many major albums that Phil Collins, Peter Gabriel's old Genesis bandmate, went so far as to include a "There is no Fairlight on this album" line on the cover of his No Jacket Required LP. Well, it was one of the few. U2, recording at their own Windmill Lane studio in Dublin and at Slane Castle in County Meath, used Paul Barrett to program Fairlight for the album The Unforgettable Fire, with the most unforgettable results, as we just heard, being on the title track. With Fairlights installed in every major studio and many acts taking them out on the road or engaging Fairlight-savvy producers or specialist programmers to make sure they were connected to an essential audio dimension, one almost guaranteeing hits, the reputation and desirability of the technology seemed to know no bounds. New Romantic's Duran Duran used it prominently on their 12th British hit and second number one, The Reflex, while it also featured on George Michael's breakthrough solo hit after leaving Wham, Careless Whisper.
You got too far this time, but I'm dancing on the Valentine. I tell you, somebody's fooling around with my chances on the danger line. I'll cross that bridge when I find it, another day to make my
Of number ones there on Radio Q by 80s British music superstars Duran Duran with The Reflex and George Michael with Careless Whisper, both showcasing the dexterity of Australian invention, the Fairlight CMI, which just happens to be celebrating its 30th birthday and is the subject of this special edition of Reelin' in the Years. A bit of flag waving, you might say. With so much of the Fairlight's success and reputation being global, it's easy to forget the extent of its impact in the land of its creation. Australian producers and artists were able to closely monitor refinements and directly contribute to them. Some of its early champions amongst the working musician community was later Oscar nominee David Hirschfelder, then playing with Little River Band and John Farnham, who even took one on stage with him, and Icehouse's Ivor Davies, who used it not only on hit tracks such as Mr. Big and No Promises, but also on his soundtrack to the film Razorback and his score for the ballet Boxers.
We had managers at the time, and their office was in the same building directly over the factory. So that, in fact, this was in Rushcutters Bay at that time, and in fact, I would go down there and literally wander around the workshop where the soldering was going on and talk to the technicians. And there was never a sense that this thing came from a shop. It came from a warehouse with a little production line in it. The initial response from me was a great godsend, because it meant that I could work on my own, and I've always wanted to do that. I've always wanted to sort of create the whole picture. So here finally was an environment where, even though it was going to go back to a band eventually, I could create these little scenes all by myself. It put into the hands of the individual enormous power, and once again, I think was probably the forerunner of actually getting away from the big studio system and contributing to the beginnings of what by now has become a cottage industry. Almost everything you hear in the charts these days, and certainly everything you hear in the clubs, is done in somebody's bedroom. Something like the Fairlight is a great incentive to just play with sound, and it's during that process where you're playing with things and suddenly something happens and you think, oh, that's fantastic, I can do something with that, and that's where the song starts.
If a band had a prominent keyboard player in the mid-80s, then it was more likely than not to delve into Fairlight's possibilities. One of those bands in Australia was Cold Chisel with Don Walker. Their final studio album, 1984's 20th Century, yielded the hit Saturday Night with very discernible digitised sound patterns, courtesy of, you know what. Saturday night.
searching for